Welcome, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Geneva Eaton has learned to live with life in Hacienda. The stench of mold from the stairwell in front of her door, the winter she spent huddled at her stove for heat, the broken security gate that allows drug dealers and squatters to walk past the paid security guards and urinate on her doorstep. But the mice were too much. For 8 months, the 73-year-old woke to handfuls of half-dead mice wriggling in the glue traps lining the floors and cupboard of her apartment. In the space of a few hours, she caught 12. She put her nicest family belongings into storage. She went to bed with the lights on, afraid that the vermin she heard chewing through her walls would bite her in her sleep. That's a passage from a recent report written by one of our guests today, Amy Julia Harris at the Center for Investigative Reporting. It was part of a series called Subsidized Squalor, which revealed the extremely poor living conditions in Richmond's public housing projects, an extensive mismanagement in the Richmond Housing Authority. According to HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, public housing was established to provide decent and safe rental housing for eligible low-income families, the elderly, and persons with disabilities. But what Amy Harris discovered is that some public housing in the Bay Area, at least, is far from decent or safe. And she links it to mismanagement that has led HUD to deem the Richmond Housing Authority one of the country's most troubled. Amy Julia Harris covers housing and development for the Center for Investigative Reporting, and she joins us from the offices of CIR. Amy, thank you so much for the reporting and for joining us today on Your Call.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I also want to invite you to join the conversation with Amy and our other guests who will be coming on later. If you have been reading her reporting or have personal experience of public housing, whether as someone who lives there or as someone who works for a housing authority, what do you think these stories that we're hearing out of Richmond tell us about the state of public housing more broadly? Is the problem a lot about mismanagement, or is it just as much about disinvestment? What could change in the way that public housing is funded and operated to make it work better for the people who live there? And how can we confront the challenges of public housing without reinforcing stereotypes about the projects? The number to call is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Amy, I want to start by saying there's actually some news from Richmond this week around the reporting that you have done. The city council calling for an audit, an independent investigator to audit the housing authority, and also voting unanimously on Tuesday night to ask HUD for vouchers to relocate the 130 senior and disabled residents of the Hacienda complex, which is kind of the worst of the worst in Richmond that you reported a lot on. Tell us about what's happening right now in Richmond.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, the Richmond City Council decided, after hearing streams of residents come forward and complain about mold, raw sewage, and pretty much a host of horror stories in their apartments, said we need to evacuate all of the residents from the Hacienda housing complex. So they voted on that a few weeks ago, and then this was just a follow-up that happened at the city council meeting on Tuesday for how they were actually going to pay for that and what the timeline was. So what they decided was it's going to cost about $700,000 to relocate all of these seniors, and the Richmond Housing Authority is currently $7 million in debt, so they just didn't have the money. So now the city council is asking HUD for money to relocate all these residents.
And there's also call for an independent audit, is that right?
Right, right. So the Housing Authority, a few weeks ago, the City Council had also heard residents' complaints about poor treatment from staff members and just breakdowns in the management of the Housing Authority. And then they voted to hire an independent auditor to investigate the Housing Authority, and they're going to choose a firm sometime soon.
So these issues are obviously not new in Richmond. These have been going on for a while, and some of these folks have been dealing with these problems for years and years. What are some of the stories that you brought forward, that you encountered in your reporting, that were kind of most shocking to you and that you think have really resonated with people outside of these public housing units and to make them go, oh, wow, this cannot stand. This has to change.
All right. So I think the passage that you read about Geneva Eaton was one that really got me. I spent months just talking to her in her apartment, and every time I went, there was kind of a new indignity, whether it was cockroach infestation or, like you mentioned, the mice. When I was there, in just a space of a few hours, she caught, you know, 12 mice just in the time that I was there. And what I was really fascinated by was just following up on, she had said she had complained for months and months to the housing authority, and actually, so then I decided, okay, you know, I'm going to follow the complaints. And one thing that we found was that the housing authority was marking things, problems as fixed. They said that she didn't have any mice or cockroaches in her apartment, that they had dealt with the problem months ago, but she was still having the same problems months later. And what we found was that that was happening in several different cases. So I think those were kind of simple solutions of just a responsive management from the housing authority that don't require a ton of money. It was just simple follow-up to pretty basic problems.
So, and so you talk about this, so we have the problem of vermin, which is really obviously very, very troubling, hard to live mm-hmm. in that situation. What are some of the other kind of key things that were breaking down and not being dealt with?
So another thing that we found was just sort of basic property management. So Hacienda was the worst of the housing projects. When I talked to different people, they said there were lights in the back courtyard that hadn't worked for years. So these were seniors and disabled people who were just rolling on their wheelchairs and in their walkers in the pitch black through a courtyard in the back in a not safe area of town. And they said they'd complained about that for years and the housing authority hadn't fixed it. There were also issues like a broken security gate in the front of Hacienda, where I personally saw and just went through this gate and saw just streams of people coming in with impunity and walking around and security guards not doing anything. So those were sort of the living conditions on the ground, but on a broader level, what we found was just mismanagement at the housing authority and audits going back years and years from the federal government saying that the housing authority wasn't managing the limited funds that it had and had breakdowns in leadership. They called the executive director ineffective and said that, you know, he and the housing authority and the other management just didn't have the experience and that key staff were weak. So it seemed like there were problems for both the people on the ground and just at the upper management level.
We're speaking with Amy Julia Harris. She covers housing and development for the Center for Investigative Reporting. And we're talking about her recent series for CIR that's been in the Chronicle on KQED called Subsidized Squalor, which is about the many problems in Richmond, California's largest housing public housing complexes. And we're also talking about the situation in public housing more broadly, and invite your calls at 866-798-8255. So, I mean, you talk about HUD having audited the Richmond Housing Authority, but so once those audits are done and these problems are identified, who's supposed to have, I think a lot of people just don't know how does a housing authority work, who oversees it,
sure.
Who's supposed to be going, hey, wait a minute, we got a problem here, this has to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm. So the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development oversees and funds the more than 4,000 public housing agencies in the United States. And every year they do a basic report card on a housing authority that sees sort of basic things like, is property management being done? Is the housing authority collecting rent? Are people living in safe conditions? And what is the financial health of the agency? Are they managing their money well? And then they spit out a number on this report card for each of the housing agencies. And Richmond had gotten a failing score every year on this report card since 2009. It was one of only 44 of these 4,000 housing agencies to get scores this low. And what happens then, if you do fail on these, that's when HUD puts you under heightened scrutiny and says, okay, look, there's a timeline for when you have to begin fixing these problems. But for years and years, one of the problems was that HUD didn't really have a mechanism to enforce changes and make sure that the local housing authority was fixing these problems. And it wasn't until 2013, really, that the housing authority began to fix some of these problems that HUD had identified years and years ago.
And talk for a minute, when reading about, say, security at these complexes, mm-hmm. that's contracted out.
Right.
And is that common, and is that part of the issue, that maybe there wasn't good oversight of those contractors?
I don't know how many housing authorities actually have security. I think Richmond, what they have told me was that you know, they took security seriously, so actually could pay for contractors. I think the issue was that there was no follow-up when residents had complained repeatedly that the security guards were not doing their jobs. You know, I went to meetings in the resident councils where every single meeting it was the same complaints, that the security guards weren't doing anything. They were letting drug dealers and prostitutes sneak into these complexes. And at one complex, there was an 81-year-old woman who just acted as a volunteer security guard, signing people in and basically doing the job of the security guards who were paid to do that. So I think the issue was not money for the security guards. It was just ensuring that the security guards were doing their jobs.
So give us a bit of a portrait about who are the people that you have met who are living in these buildings in Richmond and how they're organizing to try to advocate for their interests and how you got to this story to begin with.
Sure. Well, I had started the story, I'll tackle that one first, of just sort of on the paperwork side, looking at all of the audits of the public housing agencies in the U.S., and I got my hands on this list of the 44 worst housing agencies and then kind of zeroed in on Richmond. And from there, I just decided to begin knocking on doors and going into these housing complexes and talking to people. And going into the two housing complexes I focused on were the two high-rises in Richmond, the Nevin Plaza housing complex and Hacienda, which are both predominantly for seniors and people with disabilities. And throughout the course of the reporting, I just kind of, you know, began going into people's apartments and asking them what was wrong, to show me what was wrong, and then explain to me what they had done to try to fix it. So on an organization level, they have these resident councils, which is supposed to be an opportunity for residents to come together, kind of air all of their complaints, and then complain to this other body, which is called an advisory commission, which was supposed to directly report to the housing authority all of these problems. And what I'd found was that residents had been complaining for years and years and years. The meeting minutes going back years show that they were, you know, they were all aware of these problems. These were open secrets there, but they just weren't getting follow-up from the housing authority. But since the stories have published, I think there's been a little bit of a renewed sense that something might get done. So residents are being much more vocal about their complaints, going to city council meetings, and putting a renewed push into actually organizing on a local level to get some of these basic things fixed.
Amy, I want to bring in a caller who has followed your reporting. Jane and Marin, welcome to your call.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Thank goodness for investigative reporters. We need them, and a lot gets done when they get on a story. I've been finding out through the years. I saw that article in the paper, and I clipped out all the pages, and it went to Senator Barbara Boxer. Whom else shall I send copies to?
What would you say, Amy?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear part of that.
So what the caller was saying, she's followed your reporting. She was, you know, saying thank goodness for investigative reporters doing this kind of work. She said she cut out all your articles and sent them to Senator Boxer, and she wants to know who else would you send them to kind of raise awareness about this among public officials.
Great. I think probably HUD is a big thing. The Region 9 office of HUD in San Francisco is really the ones who are the direct overseers of Richmond and who have the power to crack the whip and make sure that things get improved. So I would, in addition to that, probably the people responsible are also, the HUD officials, but Congress as well.
You're listening to Your Call. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We are talking about the state of public housing very locally here in the Bay Area, starting with the reporting that our guest Amy Julia Harris, who works with the Center for Investigative Reporting, has done on public housing in Richmond, a really eye-opening series called Subsidized Squalor, which you can find at our website, yourcallradio.org. I also want to invite you, if you are someone who has lived in public housing, if you work in public housing, when you hear these stories, what reaction do you have to them? Do you think that this is like a tip of an iceberg of kind of things that are going on across public housing, or are they an aberration? And one of the things that the head of the housing authority and also Mayor Gail McLaughlin in Richmond has said is, hey, this is a lot about the lack of investment from the federal government in local housing authorities. Do you think that this is about that lack of commitment in terms of spending, or is it about mismanagement? The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Amy, I want to bring in a couple of other guests who will have different perspectives on this story and on the issue more broadly. One of them is Will Fisher. He is a senior policy analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and his work focuses on federal low-income housing programs. He joins us from Austin, Texas. Will, good to have you with us.
Good to be on.
And also on the line from Richmond is Jackie Thompson. She has a really unique perspective on what's been happening in Richmond. She is a tenant commissioner who lives in public housing in Richmond. She helps residents understand and act on their rights as tenants. And she also used to work at the San Francisco Housing Authority. So, Jackie, thanks so much for coming on and bringing your experience to the conversation.
You're very welcome.
Very much appreciated. And so, Jackie, I want to start with you. I mean, you have been around this as this story has gone from something that obviously people living in public housing in Richmond have been aware of to something that now people around the Bay Area and even nationally are aware of this. What has then that been like for you, and kind of where do you feel, you know, what's your reaction at this point to the change that's happened and what needs to happen next?
Well, I tell you, growing up in public housing, I've been involved with public housing, I guess, for over 50 years. And the problem of mice and that type of thing has always been around. With less money, management was much better years ago. We were able to manage our properties with less money. But I don't know, all of a sudden a shift came in, the administration's changed, and you know, people no longer had an interest in public housing. They just had an interest to draw a paycheck, some people did. And the focus of learning HUD rules and regulations and, you know, being sensitive and compassionate to the needs of people went away. And so now, not just, I'm going to say in Richmond, but throughout a lot of housing authorities, you have people that just come to get a paycheck, and they're not sensitive to the needs of the people who are their clients. I think that's one of the problems there. But my experience in it, because I know how to fight for myself, I have to use that to help the residents learn to fight for themselves. I don't have the bad problem because I know what to do. I know where to go. So I'm taking all of my knowledge now. Matter of fact, we're getting ready to organize the Hacienda development. They had a resident council at one time, and it disbanded. But this coming Monday, at 5:30 p.m., the residents will gather and elect officers. We will become a duly organized resident council. Even while they're going through this process, they're going to do that Monday, and they will be sworn in as new officers, and I will teach them their tenant rights, teach them to understand the grievance procedure, and just teach them how to live cohesively in a community where they have to look after each other.
So, Jackie, I want to hear more about that organizing effort and the kind of, you know, the way you kind of empower people by knowing what their rights are. But I want to ask you, I want to go back to what you said about this kind of long change you've seen as someone who's lived and worked in public housing. What you see is kind of a change of attitude in terms of a commitment to public housing, and ask you where you think that change comes from. Is that a local level thing? Is it about our society more broadly? How do you understand it?
I think it's society, because I look at news programs a lot, and I looked at the one where New York Housing Authority residents filed a lawsuit against the Housing Authority for a mold problem. I don't know if you saw that. I meant to order it, but they had mold and management. They had one person put a hidden camera in their home, and it just showed maintenance coming in, looking, and walking away. You know, so I think a lack of education, you know, it's not knowledge that people are working on now. It's who you know. Somebody will bring their cousin in, somebody will bring their uncle in, and people are working, but to not be knowledgeable. I believe the housing authorities today, locally and nationally, are not educating their staff. And so some staff are not aware of a grievance procedure. They say, oh, here's a complaint form. But what is the procedure for the tenant to file the grievance? Oh, we never heard of anything like that. So I'm teaching the tenants now how to file a grievance complaint, and I've got to help educate the housing authority, which are supposed to be working in conjunction with legal aid or somebody, to put a legal document together.
That's Jackie Thompson.
We don't have that.
She's a tenant commissioner who lives in Richmond Public Housing, used to work for the San Francisco Housing Authority. And Jackie, I want to bring on a caller who lives in public housing. John, welcome to the program. You live in San Francisco, is that right?
Yes, and I live in public housing in San Francisco. Thank you for having this program. The problem in San Francisco is not just with the Housing Authority. No question the Housing Authority has been a problem. But the problem is actually HUD as far as funding goes. The funding for HUD has increased from $36 billion to $64 billion in HUD's budget since 2007. These billions have not made it to the Housing Authority in San Francisco. The capital funding from HUD for the San Francisco Housing Authority has decreased during that same time period from $13.9 million to $9.6 million. So my question is, how does HUD figure that the Housing Authority in San Francisco can fix their problems when they're decreasing the amount of money to fix those problems? And where have all the billions that HUD has been getting, where is it going?
So
it's obviously not making it to the housing in San Francisco, for instance.
Great question, John, connecting what's happened at the local level to federal funding and how it works. Will Fisher, this is what you work on. You want to respond to John?
Sure. I think that there is an underlying problem here of underfunding for public housing. I wouldn't put it at HUD. These decisions are made by Congress, and this is part of a larger pattern of tight funding for the portion of the budget that public housing is in, which is called domestic discretionary funding, and that's seen really a really large share, especially in the last few years starting in 2011. It's seen a really large share of the deficit reduction that's occurred, and so there have been large cuts in the overall segment of the budget that public housing includes, and because of that, there's been that's led to deep cuts in public housing, and there just haven't been enough resources to address the renovation needs that there are in public housing.
But what about the question of just the change in how that money that HUD has been allocated and where it's been focused? I know you've done some research on this for the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities.
Right. I mean, I don't think that there is an issue of there being large increases of funding at HUD that aren't being used well. I don't think that's what's driving the public housing situation. I mean, HUD has, there have been some increases in funding, for example, for the Section 8 voucher program, which is the largest rental assistance program, and that's a program that helps people rent units in the private market, and that's gone up some, partly because there's been an increased number of vouchers and also partly because market rents have risen, and so there have been some increases in funding for that, but it's still, actually funding for that is still way shorter than where it needs to be. There's only about 1 in 4 eligible people get any kind of federal rental assistance, so it's not that there's too much money going to HUD, it's that there's actually not enough money going to HUD overall, and public housing is apparently a part of that shortfall.
And give us a little bit of the history. We're going to go to a break in about 60 seconds, but when did that decline in funding begin?
Well, there's really been a long-standing history of underfunding of public housing that goes back decades. And since the 1990, for example, there have been really large-scale losses of public housing units. So we've lost about there were about 1.3 million units in 1995, and about 200,000 have already been lost from the public housing stock, and often that's been because there haven't been enough resources to renovate them, and they've deteriorated to the point where they've been demolished. So there's this long-standing history. There have been ups and downs in funding over the years, and when the current administration first came in, when the Obama administration first came in 2009, as part of the Stimulus Act, there was a big infusion of money.
I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call, and we are talking about the state of public housing from Richmond, California, and then across the country. Please stay with us.
This is Your Call, a program that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-8255. Or if you prefer, you can post your comment or question on the website at yourcallradio.org, where you will find all the links related to today's program. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Stay with us.
This is where rodents and roaches are like family. Cause we share the same meals. Top ramen, cereal, Kool-Aid. It's no family complaints. Everything's enjoyed that we refrigerate and put in cabinets. We feel 30 below air from cracked windows. No heat for when Richmond wind blows. No AC to cool down the weather that makes us sweat.
That's Richmond poet William Hartfield Peoples giving a bit of a perspective on the situation in public housing in Richmond. That's comes from a collaboration between Youth Speaks and the Center for Investigative Reporting, which has done some really important reporting about the state of public housing in the city of Richmond here in the Bay Area. That's what we're talking about on today's Your Call. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's going to be our weekly media roundtable where we talk with journalists about coverage of the week's news. On Monday, we're going to do an open line to Moral Monday, which is the NAACP-led movement that is getting a lot of attention in North Carolina. You want to tune in for that. And on Tuesday, we're going to speak to Jessica Gordon and Nina Wilson, who are the co-founders of Idle No More. This is a viral movement for justice for Canada's First Nations people that emerged last year there in the Bay Area to raise awareness and build bridges between environmentalists and environmental justice advocates in the U.S. and Canada. On today's show, we're talking about public housing, starting with the reporting done by our guest, Amy Julia Harris, who covers housing and development for the Center for Investigative Reporting. Her series, Subsidized Squalor, has uncovered a lot of problems in Richmond's largest housing complexes. Also with us are Will Fisher, Senior Policy Analyst with the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, and Jackie Thompson, who is a tenant commissioner who lives in Richmond Public Housing. I want to bring you back, Amy, listening to what our caller John said about the role of federal funding and the effect on the local level, and then also hearing Will talk about this longstanding underfunding of public housing. One of the explanations that has come from the Housing Authority in Richmond, as well as from city leaders in Richmond, is, hey, there's just not enough money for here for us to do that right. How would you respond?
I think that it's kind of both, that there that housing authorities across the country, like Willard said, have been underfunded. So everyone is facing these same slashed budgets. So for things like major capital repairs, I think that's an issue of public housing across the country. One of the issues we found in Richmond, though, was that Richmond just wasn't managing the limited funds that it had well. So there were things like a roof in Hacienda that had been leaking for years and years, and they had hired contractors since at least 2006 to fix the roof. But, you know, in the Housing Authority's own documents, there were cases that showed that the contractors hadn't finished the job and the roof had continued to leak. So there were things of just basic oversight of some of the contracts and of their limited budgets as well. So I think it was a combination of both underfunding, where they didn't have, it was now estimated that it would cost more than $19 million to fix up the worst public housing project. The Housing Authority doesn't have that, and they're not going to get that money from HUD to do these full renovations. But there was also just the issue of smaller scale things that they did have control over. They just weren't managing their money well.
Jackie Thompson, you have experience both as a tenant in Richmond Public Housing and working at the San Francisco Housing Authority. How would you, you know, talk about that balance between lack of funding and the kind of management that didn't use what funding there was effectively?
Okay, you know, the way I look at this is just like in your on your regular job. If they cut back hours, you cut back your spending. You know, if you, your salary is reduced, you find a way to adjust your budget. And I think for a long time, nobody really looked at the budget. Now you've got your finance people in the housing authorities. I don't work in finance. Matter of fact, I don't work. I'm retired. But I do believe that budget analysts are needed. You know, finance people do one thing, but a budget analyst will actually look at the budget. Now, the housing authorities must submit a budget to HUD. And it's about how you manage the money you have. You're not going to go out and buy a brand-new Cadillac when you know you can't even afford a Volkswagen. It doesn't make sense. And so I think that, you know, the budgets weren't watched properly. And the executive director depends on other people, you know, his staff to keep him up to date, or any executive director would expect staff to keep them up to date on where are we on the dollars, what are we spending. Look at these contractors you're hiring. They come and they go. Amy was just saying, only a percentage of the work was done on the roof at the Hacienda. So you got 80% of the work done and 20% pending, and you still got problems. So what's going on with these contractors and these contracts, you know? So you just have to learn to better manage money, look at what your where your budget is, and see what you can afford and what you can't afford. I really believe contractors are ripping off the housing authorities because they do such a poor quality of work. I am a resident commissioner. Unfortunately, I'm not going to say unfortunately, I had to move back into public housing well after I became disabled. And I look at the quality of work contractors do now, you know, and then they have to come back. And then the next thing you know, well, they let them go. Now they got somebody else, and they're saying, well, we have to finish the work they did, you know. And their work, we're getting some of the shabbiest contractors.
Jackie, I want to ask Will Fisher about this, who kind of has a broader perspective beyond the Bay Area. I mean, is there an increased amount of outsourcing, whether it's security or this kind of repairs, things like that, happening in housing authorities? Is that something that's changed, or is that a longstanding practice?
It's a longstanding practice. It may be that it has increased in recent years, that there's more of that contracting out, but I don't really know if that is
a significant
general
change.
Trend, that there's more of it, yeah.
All right. I want to invite listeners who have had direct experience, whether it's public housing residents or working in public housing, to join the conversation. What should the standards be? How do we enforce them? And what are ways we could change the way public housing is funded and operated to make it work better for the people who live there and for our communities as a whole? The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. I want to welcome Harry in San Francisco to the program. Harry, good to have you with us.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to know about privatization and public housing. Also, if your guest knows, why are the directors, why do we have people like Jim Jones, Julie Lee, and Helmy Alvarez running the San Francisco Housing Authority? What exactly is going on with this privatization? Because I heard about it, but there don't seem to be any news stories about it.
So you heard specifically about privatization in San Francisco?
Yes.
All right, well, maybe we can, I don't know, Amy, I know you've specifically reported a lot on Richmond. I don't know if you want to address that, or maybe Will can talk about that as well.
Sure, of privatization. I know the long-term plan for Richmond's public housing is that they plan on privatizing it and turning it over to private developers and property managers to run it day-to-day, but the housing authority would still own the property. So one of the things that they've been using and getting grants for is this. It is the RAD program for HUD, the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program, where they get a pot of money and get private developers and investments and tax credits to fix up some of these public housing units and buildings that they wouldn't be able to fix up on their own with just their local funds. And then the idea is long-term, there would be renovated units, it would be private management who would run it day-to-day, and then the housing authority would still own the buildings. So I think long-term, that's what Richmond is turning to. They said that they hope to do that for all of their public housing stock by 2016.
So, Will Fisher, is that a common approach?
Yeah, there has been a increasing use of private developers in public housing, and this is something that goes back to the 1990s, and I think it reflects the fact that the biggest source of federal funds for renovation and construction of low-income housing is something called the low-income housing tax credit, where you have to have a private party involved in order to claim the credit. And so starting in the 90s, housing agencies have brought in private partners to help them with these low-income housing tax credit development deals. But what's going on now is, that Amy mentioned, is there's this rental assistance demonstration, where the big change in that is that it allows housing agencies to convert from a public housing subsidy to a subsidy under the Section 8 rental assistance program. And those subsidies have tended to be much more reliable than public housing funding, and they've kept up with inflation more consistently over time. So this is something that'll, over time, provide more resources for the housing agencies. And also, because it's more reliable, it makes it a lot easier for them to borrow private funding to redevelop the redevelop projects. So this is something that I think has the potential to be really the most promising approach to bringing new resources into public housing. But it will, like all these policies, depend on how it's how it's implemented at the local level.
So for those of us who don't work in this stuff day to day, I mean, to me, I kind of think, oh, well, this sounds like we're kind of moving away from public housing as people understood it, period, and especially developments like those we're talking about in Richmond, or actually, you know, to around a lot of cities in the country, where it's like, hey, there's publicly owned housing, it's publicly operated, and people pay rent to a local housing authority.
There are some things that would change with this. I think that there are basic things that would stay the same, though, and one is that tenants would still pay rents under close to the same rules, where they would pay 30% of their income for rent. And there would be long-term protections that make sure these things stay as affordable housing for the long run. So the changes and there's also requirements that the public housing agency retain some oversight control over the management of the property. So there are a lot of things that would stay the same, but it will bring in private investment and private parties who haven't been as involved in public housing in the past.
I want to bring in a caller. Mary in San Francisco has a question about rules around public housing. Mary, are you with us? Well, it doesn't sound like it. Mary, feel free to call us back. Hi, there you are. Hi, how are you, Mary?
Oh, I have four grandsons that live in Section 8 housing in Richmond. Their mother put in a request to change buildings the 1st of April, so she tells her old landlord she found a new place, and she has to move out of the old place today, but the Section 8 people haven't been able to go over and check out the new place. So she has to put all of their housing belongings in the U-Haul truck and find some other place to live for 2 weeks. I just think that's some draconian rules that they have. These rules, they're just destroying people in poverty even more than, you know, people with money, they could afford to go to a hotel or something. But when you have somebody who doesn't have any money in the first place, then you put them out of their housing for 2 weeks because you don't have enough inspectors to inspect the place. I just think that's draconian. And how can they say that they care about the people?
Mary, thank you so much for calling. And that's it is a tough situation. People are really in vulnerable positions. And I think about the folks who are living in Hacienda in Richmond where, okay, there's talk about relocating them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there must be concerns about how that'll work and what kind of place there will be for them. And Mary here has a very specific situation. People she cares about, 2 weeks out of housing. Jackie?
Yeah, well, you know, this is what I was talking about earlier about residents not knowing their rights. They give you a handbook. But so many times we'll take the handbooks and we'll take the lease and put them up, keep the keys in our pocket, and keep going. Then when something happens, we don't know what to do. Every resident of public housing, whether they're conventional or Section 8, has a right to file a grievance complaint. Now, under the Section 8 program, and I think the director over there, the leader over there, is Mr. William Bouton, you have a case manager. And this person's relative, when they didn't get the response they needed and the time was running out, you holler all the way through. You come to city council meetings. You say, this is what's happening to me. Call HUD. I need somebody to listen to what's going on with me. You shouldn't be in that situation. I would say at this moment, contact the Section 8 department, ask for Mr. Bouton, and or file a grievance complaint. That never should have happened. And see, if our commission was still active, that's something that could have come. We fell below a quorum, so we couldn't meet anymore. Those are the kind of things that would come to the housing commission. Call the mayor's office. The mayor is the one that makes the appointments to the commission. So right now she's got the housing advisory commission in her hand because she's got to make the appointment to fill the seat so that we can get back to business. This lady's problem would have come before our commission. But right now, holler to everybody you can. File a grievance.
That's the voice of Jackie Thompson. She's a tenant commissioner who lives in Richmond Public Housing, and she also used to work for the San Francisco Housing Authority. Also with us on your call today when we are talking about public housing, the state of it here in the Bay Area and Northern California, but also nationally, just kind of asking where we're headed, how we make sure that some of these really disastrous situations, like have been reported on by our guest, Amy Julia Harris, who covers housing and development for the Center for Investigative Reporting, what she's reported on Richmond, how we stop those things from happening, empower the people at the base, and also deal with this kind of national question of underfunding for public housing, as our guest Will Fisher from the Center on Budget Policy and Policy Priorities has been talking about. The number to call if you want to join this conversation, whether you are a public housing resident who has a question, who has an insight about how we can make things better, or you've worked for a housing authority, or just have been following the reporting in the Chronicle or on KQED about this, about the situation in Richmond. What do you think? How can we make things better? The number to call, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Amy, your reporting has clearly, I thought it was really interesting what you were saying, that as there's been increased public attention to the situation in Richmond, people on the ground have gotten more active, in part because they feel like someone's listening and something can happen. I mean, I think it really speaks to the potential for reporters and the media to look at this. And I mean, let's face it, public housing often doesn't get reported on in our kind of mainstream media. What's this experience made you think about that and the role of the press?
Yeah, I think that all of the issues that we reported on were not new to the residents of public housing. They had known about this for years and years and lived it for years. It also wasn't new to the federal government. HUD had kept all of these audits, knew about the mismanagement for years as well. And, you know, people at the Housing Authority also had known about this. So I think it was just an issue of framing it in a way of, you know, documenting all of the problems and then really just putting it out to the public of saying, you know, do you think that this is fine? Because in all of my you know, contact with people at the Housing Authority, they were saying, you know, you're sensationalizing these issues. It's really not that bad. This is a problem everywhere. And what we found out was that, yes, underfunding is a problem everywhere, but there are plenty of housing authorities who are managing their budgets and their operations far better on a shoestring budget. So some of these problems were very unique to Richmond. And I think framing it in that way and putting it out has forced change and forced the city council and the housing authority to kind of wake up to these problems that they knew were there and fix them.
And Amy, you talked in your reporting about how there's a small number of housing authorities that HUD has identified as really troubled. And the San Francisco Housing Authority was one of those, but has made some changes.
Right. So San Francisco has gone through kind of a similar process as Richmond of the feds have laid out a blueprint for change. You know, you have to improve your operations, get your finances in order, make all of these series of changes, and HUD oversees them. And Richmond is doing the same sort of thing. So, the federal government is aware of this. They've laid out an improvement plan, and both Richmond and San Francisco are on this. And you know, hopefully they'll make all of the changes and get off of this federal troubled list.
So, Will Fisher, what are the really positive models for public housing, whether it's, you know, specific developments or authorities, different places in the country where people go, wow, people are really getting served here, resources are being used well, and what sets them apart? What's the model that we might be able to follow?
Well, there are a lot of housing agencies that have done, you know, redevelopment of housing in recent years. One example is Seattle is a housing agency that's done, you know, major redevelopment of its public housing, but done it in a way that's, I think the risk with these big redevelopment projects is that tenants can fall by the wayside, that they can get displaced and not be allowed into the development after they're redeveloped, and they're an agency that's done a good job of minimizing displacement and bringing them back in. I think I think that it really does vary a lot, though, and I think it comes back to the point that that Amy and Jackie have been making, that it depends a lot on how well the agencies are managed. There's good agencies, and there's also ones that do a much less good job.
But is there anything we can, agencies are managed well. Agencies are often managed well because someone is paying attention and pressing them to be better. Are there kind of models for public engagement or how cities approach public housing that helps make sure we have effective housing authorities?
It was Ophelia Pascal, who is the regional director of HUD, who had said one kind of basic thing that housing authorities can do is just to have a very open dialogue with tenants. They are the ones who the housing agencies exist to serve. So making sure that there is an open dialogue with them is really important. And she said that can be as easy as, just having some of the top management walk the properties and talk to residents. And one thing that we had found in Richmond was that there was very much a hostility and animosity between the Housing Authority staff and residents, to the point where residents were afraid to speak out because they were retaliated against. Housing Authority staff were rude to them. So there definitely it didn't feel like a safe environment for residents to even tell the Housing Authority their concerns. So I think that's kind of a basic thing, and they said that in good housing authorities, just making sure that you have that trust and respect between tenants and the agency and trust that they will actually follow up on their problems is key.
Jackie?
I agree wholeheartedly. With the Housing Authority in Richmond and not having a property manager and maybe only one resident manager, which is a live-in manager, the tenants had no connection with the Housing Authority because they saw nobody on the properties, which is one reason when I became chair of the Housing Commission, I delegated commissioners or asked them to volunteer to take a site and just go out there and be the eyes and ears for the Housing Authority. Let's help them out. We began knowing the residents. Well, I know them anyway because I've been here a long time. But, we would just walk the property, see what it was like, and then give the Housing Authority a written report on what our findings were. What did the parking lot look like? What did the garbage rooms look like? And we've reported these things. On paper, But Amy is so right. The residents built a better communication with tenant leaders and their neighbors than they did with the Housing Authority, and that's because they're some people that talk bad to them, or if they're behind in their rent, they're afraid, that they're not saying anything. This person can put me out. And when you threaten residents like that, for them to even think that I'm going to be living without a roof over my head, I can't think of that. So I just shut up and I won't say nothing. But now, I tell you, now you want a revolution? You got it. We're getting started. When we finish Hacienda, we're going over to Nystrom. We're going to move from Nystrom to Triangle Court. And the long-range goal, like we did in San Francisco, is to organize a tenant, a citywide tenant coalition of residents, Section 8 and public housing.
So Jackie,
that is my mission.
Jackie, you are talking about the kind of just incredible work from the bottom up to try to change the situation. I just want to get a last thought from Will Fisher, since you look at the national situation, and talk about, when it comes to Capitol Hill, talking about public housing and funding for it and making sure that it's effective and reasonably supported, what's the outlook?
Well, I think the future for public housing is really going to be tied up in bigger decisions that we make about priorities. Paul Ryan just put out a budget this week that proposes another close to $800 million in cuts in the discretionary budget that public housing comes out of at the same time that it raises defense spending and doesn't raise any new revenues. And I think it's going to be really important to public housing whether we end up following a vision like that or whether we pursue a more balanced approach that balances spending cuts, revenue increases, and leaves some room for investments in public housing.
And Amy Julia Harris, I know that you have really dug deep into this story in Richmond, but I understand that you are looking at the Center for Investigative Reporting to perhaps expand this project.
Yes, I think once we follow this up, we plan to look at some of the worst housing agencies in the country and just see what all of the issues are there. So we're very much going to be on the public housing beat for a while.
And Jackie, if you talk about you want to take these next steps
to move to the other, you know, other complexes in Richmond. And Mariah, how, if people wanted to contact you, if they want to be part of this, and they, you know, they're listening now and they live in public housing or care about it, how would they do that?
Area code 510-860-3842. Or they can email me at windancer, that has two D's in it, WINDDANCER, the number 60, at comcast.net. If you want to work with me in organizing the development where you live, feel free to give me a call, because we're going to get to you anyway. But you can start now. Matter of fact, I'll be starting a training next week with HUD rules and regulations on tenant organizations, what management can and cannot do relative to resident council. They cannot shut you down. They can't. They don't even. They're not even. If you don't invite them to a meeting, they shouldn't even be there.
Well, Jackie Thompson, I really appreciate you being on the program. We are going to put, if you hold on the line, we're going to get that information about that training from you. We want to make sure that that is available to listeners at yourcallradio.org. Jackie Thompson is a tenant commissioner who lives in Richmond Public Housing, helps residents understand and act on their rights as tenants. Also with us today, Will Fisher, senior policy analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and he focuses on federal low-income housing programs. Will, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks also to Amy Julia Harris, who covers housing and development for the Center for Investigative Reporting. And her reporting about public housing in Richmond really sparked this conversation for us. And hopefully this is one that continues. Amy, hope we can have you back again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And this is Your Call. I'm Matt Martin sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Thank you for listening. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of the Supreme Court ruling that struck down limits on total campaign donations by individuals. We'll also talk about the latest report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the worsening situation in Afghanistan ahead of this weekend's presidential election. We'll be joined by the Huffington Post's Paul Blumenthal, Mark Hertzgard of The Nation magazine, and The Times of London's Jeremy Kelly. Join the conversation on the next Your Call.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.